There are many things in life that we spend lots of time worrying about. For those of you who have children, I am assuming that you're something like me. You spend a fair bit of your time wondering, how do I give these kids what they need in order to become the kind of adults that I know they can be? It's a question that educator Steve Bidop has been asking for some decades now. You might know him as the author behind the million-selling Raising Boys. He's now turned his attention once again to the mental health of our girls. His belief is that perhaps they're growing up too fast in these times. What can we do to support them in their growth? And what are the 10 things, according to Steve Bidop, that girls need most? That's the title of his new book. He joins me now on Afternoons. Hi, Steve.
Good afternoon, Claire.
Steve, you have a lovely way of being able to simplify this complicated process called growing up. Now, you've been guiding parents through the process of supporting their kids in their quest to adulthood for many decades now. What have you noticed that's changing in the lives, particularly of girls?
Okay, well, it used to be, Claire, that girls were going great. 20 years ago, they were flying ahead, and that's why I concentrated on boys for nearly 35 years, because boys were the disaster area. But about 10 years ago, my colleagues all around the world were picking up this really serious downturn in the mental health of girls. And it became, and I had a teenage daughter in those times, and I saw what she was going through and her friends were going through. And girls were just getting hammered, and we just got more and more alarmed. And so this new book is because I thought we needed some stronger medicine to give parents to help girls regain self-belief and all the things that feminism was working for, which seem to have gone out the window just lately.
I think there's a new and interesting way of coming through, but what you're saying is girls were suffering. What was the evidence of this? What were you seeing, Steve? How were they showing their
Yes,
suffering?
the most clear-cut and probably the core thing was anxiety. Now, there may be people listening who've got daughters who are relaxed and confident and spirited in their into their mid-teens, who've got loyal friends and are treated respectfully by the boys in their lives. But and that's fantastic if that's the case. But for about two girls out of five, that's just so not so. They're massively anxious, and currently, across the Western world, one in five teenage girls is on anxiety medication, and so they've reached a point where their mum or dad have taken them to their doctor because it's that scary and severe. And anxiety then drives the other things like self-harm and eating disorders and alcohol overuse and risky sex. And so, but anxiety, we think, is the core.
Steve, what do you think is behind this increase in anxiety? Because you're painting a picture that's, very painful for people to hear. It's painful to think that these girls are suffering, and I wonder sometimes whether they're admitting to it more or whether there is actually an increase in their anxiety. What's your theory?
Yes. Well, what I want to tell you right at the top of the interview, Claire, is that the secret of family psychology is that the kids are not the problem. And that sounds like you can relate to that. And that it's us. And we've put them in this frantic life with the hurry of our lives, the competitive nature of schooling and the kind of the way they see the world. It's just a contest, not just in doing well at school, but you have to look amazing and you have to be out there and switched on. And then there's the 24/7 saturation of the internet. And so it's a kind of a perfect storm. And what's different about our girls, and some boys are just as affected, of course, is that they have a more finely tuned radar, and girls are more open-hearted usually. And so they're kind of the ones that it's showing up so clearly. And it's often the girls that you really think are great. They're the ones who are caring about other people, who are a bit sensitive and a bit finely tuned, are the first to fall. And so it's just, I think it's us that have to get our act together. And so this new book, 10 Things Girls Need Most, is kind of stronger medicine, because it push it. It's an interactive book where you go through it with a pen in your hand, and you self-rate the calmness levels in your family and the how well you were fathered and how well you were taught about sex and things like that. So it's for parents to start to be more self-aware so that they don't pass these wounds on.
Right at the start of this book, you ask readers a really challenging question, and it's a profound question as well. It's, as your daughter's parent, how well did stages go for you while you were growing up? I think what you're pointing to there is that reactivation in our memories of being the age that our perhaps our children are now. And you're saying to us that it's almost a chance for us to go back, look at the things that were done well or not done well in our own childhoods, and allow that to inform our parenting. How much does self-awareness play in our ability to parent well, Steve?
I think that it's everything, Claire. I'm so glad you've been looking at those questions in the book, because every bookshop now is crowded with books of quick fixes for things, and as if that's really how life is. But of course, what brings us unstuck as parents? Our parents are very, they read a lot now and they go on the internet, but what brings us unstuck is the stuff that's lurking in the shadows of ourselves, the things that we're just not quite aware of. And so when we lose our temper with our child, or an example, say if a child is experiencing a little bit of bullying. Now, if we had bullying in our past, it's very hard to come to that with a nice, steady, sort of balanced way. We can easily overreact and blast down to the school and demand suspensions, or we can be immobilized with fear and not know what to do, because we, you know, because maybe we had parents who yelled at us and were cold and difficult. And so what we know, for because I've been a therapist for nearly 40 years, is when you get a handle on those things, you can say, oh, okay, my parents never helped me a lot with sexuality, so this is, I'm going to have to really get a bit of support for this, and I want to do it differently.
In the book, Steve, you have a number of experts who add to the conversation, and when it comes to the chapter on sexuality, your advice is to start the conversations early, or your expert's advice is to start the conversations early and to start them gently as well. What's a question that you can ask, and what age should we be starting conversations with our young women about sex?
Okay, well, I think that what we did, because I'm a man, I was very aware of writing a book for girls, that there were things that weren't really my domain and or my place. And so I got several of the best sexuality educators in the world that I've ever come across to contribute those chapters. And what they were saying is that is to let kids know that that you know about some of the things that they're encountering. And so, you know, so you're saying, look, you know, I'm sure people have shown you stuff on phones and pictures and things on the net that are pretty yucky looking, and I want to let you know that love and sex, that's not what it's really like, and that it's a really great part of life, and we'll talk to you about that as time goes on, and always be happy to talk about it. And now you might then just back off, and your daughter thinks, whoa, you know, I didn't even have time to get embarrassed, and so just begin making those openings. And so when they, some idiot boy, you know, holds some picture up that's really gross and really upsetting in the primary school playground, your daughter thinks, that's right, Mum knows about that. I don't have to keep that secret from her. She's okay with that. But a little bit older, into their early teens, you'd be saying, look, you know, there's pornography, and what you need to know is pornography's really different, and here's how it's different. People in real life talk to each other, and they smile at each other, and they're kind, and they're not mean when they're having sex.
So you're decoding and making it real for them. Steve Bittup is our guest. It's coming up to 2:15, and we're talking about his latest book, 10 Things Girls Most Need Most. Steve, I feel like there's so much I want to get through with you. I have so many questions for you. But at the core of it all is You make an argument in this book that our girls are growing up too fast, that they're suffering from more anxiety than we did, or at the very least that they're able to articulate it and that they're asking for our help. How Yes. do we anxiety-proof our young girls? How do we support them so that they don't have to suffer in silence Yes. with this stuff?
Well, the way that the book works is it goes from babyhood right through, and so we need to look at even their babyhood. Is it peaceful, and are they times to be settled? And in toddlerhood, are they encouraged to be in nature and climb trees and explore and have animals? And so they know what peaceful feels like. And as they get older, it's a bit like as the mothers alongside the daughters, we have to be willing to drive off the hyenas. And so a mother or a father has to, you know, any time in history, have to wield a sword. And that might mean saying, okay, we don't have phones after 7 o'clock in our house. And we don't just leave the TV on all the time, because our daughters will get this wash of completely unconscious imagery that if you're female, you have to be thin and hot and sexy and young, and which is completely unconscious. And if we as parents have already caught that disease, so if we talk around our daughters about, oh, you know, does my bum look too big? And if we're always dieting, and if clothes shopping is our main family bonding activity, then you could get away with that 20 years ago. But now, because she's seeing thousands of images every day of women who look impossible, it's no longer a healthy thing to do. And so we're persuading mums and dads to just walk away from that consumerist shopping, fashion, clothes scene.
Steve, I know this is your life's work. You've been a parent educator, a psychologist for, as you said, over 30 years, nearly 40 years now. The ideal that you paint sometimes, though, when I read this book, actually brings up the anxiety in me. I read things like we shouldn't be drinking at all in front of our children, that we shouldn't have televisions, that, you know, it's our job to help protect them from this media tsunami. Some of us get really overwhelmed by, you know, this message that we shouldn't be busy. Do you think it's ever too late for parents to...
No, and in fact, when we were field testing the book, we were working with mums in a very low income suburb of Tasmania where I live, and one of the mums burst into tears just reading the book, and we were sitting in a circle and talked to her with what's the matter, and she said, I'm just realizing my daughter's life is just like mine. You know, there's no stable man in her life, that we fight all the time, just like I fought all the time. And so I really wanted to send a message to parents of you need more peace in your life. And please take the pressure down. You can perhaps stand this, but your kids can't. And so it's really, and I am a, you know, I'm a social change person, Claire. I'm not a quick fix psychologist. I'm saying the way we live is crazy. I don't think I said don't drink in front of your kids or don't have a TV, but just think
that
about
was in,
that.
Oh no, that was just actually a comment in an article that I read of yours.
Yes, so. And so we always have to steer a middle path, and if you can make a 5% improvement, you know, have one night a week that this you just hang out without a television. That's great, and the kids will love it, and they'll say, "Can we do that again?" One of my biggest impacts from my Raising Boys book is that tens of thousands of parents took a year off when their kids were in their teens and got an old four-wheel drive and went around Australia and had a family year. And
that was one of the suggestions you made. And yeah, I've got plenty of friends who've done that.
Yes, and they just, the kids will just cherish that memory. Yeah. They just say, that was the best year of my life. And so we can stand up to the machine, Claire. The machine says work and spend and earn and hurry. And what I'm doing in my Facebook communities and with my books is saying, there's a better life. And if you, that picture of your 14-year-old girl, you know, in the middle of the night coming across her sobbing and shaking on the bathroom floor, that's the thing that you want to avoid. And so if whatever it takes, I think if parents realise that, they'll make those changes.
You sound so peaceful, Steve Biddle. Did you ever lose your temper as a parent? You sound like a peaceful man.
The things I get angry about are refugees and pollution and things like that.
You didn't get angry at your kids when they were careless with their...
Of course I did. And yes, don't worry. I'm on my best behaviour. I'm with a very gentle ABC interviewer.
You have an enormous Facebook community. You referred to them before. You know, they're pretty close-knit. There are over 100,000 people on there. Tell me, you would have a great insight into this. What are the most repetitive concerns that they all share about their kids? Well, you know, what do you hear again and again?
Yes, well, one of them will totally surprise you, Claire. It's that we think that primary school education, and particularly the age in Australia when kids start school, is doing enormous harm.
You think it is? Did you say
yes?
It?
Yes. Right. No child should be doing sit-down schooling until they're 6 years old. And we're doing that now with kiddies of four, and prep isn't prep anymore, and kindy isn't even kindy anymore. And so
this is when... It's a German model, really, isn't it?
Yes, Germany, the Netherlands, Finland. You go to kindy, it's usually part-time. Mm-hmm. You can stay until you're ready. I think this would be... We posted about last week. People can go on the Raising Girls page and have a look. We posted about the Netherlands and how primary education works in the Netherlands. They don't do any testing.
They've got the happiest kids in the world too, apparently.
Oh, that's right.
According to the World Health Organization, yeah.
Yes. So I said, anyone out there from the Netherlands, is this true? And 80 people from the Netherlands came online and said, yes, your education sucks.
Yeah, and it's not just about them getting chocolate sprinkles on their bread. It's the, you know, that's one of the things that they say keeps Dutch kids happy. I've got some texts, Steve. Deb from Port Melbourne says, hi, Claire and Steve. She's thanking us for the conversation. She says, I have two daughters and I'm startled by how early puberty starts for girls now. They don't have the cognitive development to cope with the changes. That's her observation.
Yes.
Patrick in Brunswick makes this comment too. I'm young. I'm obviously not a girl, he says, but I've got an idea of why they might be anxious. Everyone's saying there's no job security, the ability to buy a house, etc., with all those delightful baby boomers telling us that we're not working hard enough from their houses that they bought for $1,000. That's just one of his thoughts.
These are good thoughts. And Deb's point about, puberty has come back, and it's very common now for 8-year-olds to have their breasts starting to develop. And
why
interestingly,
is that? What's the research behind that?
It's a kind of the endocrinology of this, Claire, is that it's a false puberty that starts because of a mixture of things. It can be stress, can be obesity, and also not having a father who's very engaged has a risk factor of about 3 to 6 months in the onset of puberty. And so we're very challenging to dads. My main thing in the world is to get dads to come up to speed, and so to realize that if you're a caring dad who plays with your daughter and treats her like she's intelligent and talks to her, you affect the chemistry of her body. That's how strong your effect is. And real puberty, so menstruation, generally still isn't until around 12. But there's a great chapter again written by women in the book about how to do that with our daughters, and have puberty groups and rites of passage that are really bringing in other women, aunties, and the women that are significant, to really celebrate them and say, we're going to be in your life forever. We're going to support your womanhood, whatever. And so that your daughter, it shouldn't all be on mums and dads to do this on their own.
Here in Afternoons, we're speaking with Steve Biddulph. He's the author of many, many books. You may have some on your bookshelf, but the latest one, 10 Things Girls Need Most, is our conversation today. Steve, I want to ask you before I let you go, because there's a lot of questions a lot of people have for you, my friend. I know this, but tell me about the warning signs that we should be looking out for in our teen girls. I mean, I don't know if any other parents are the same, but we think we're hawks with it. You know, we think we're onto it, but I reflect back on the things that I hid or tried to hide from my own parents as a child. And it makes me wonder, you know, what are those signs?
Yes. Well, one of the things we say is that if a girl is going to go off the rails, you'll know it by 14. But of course, the causes of it come much earlier than that, and that's because 14 is a tough age. None of us wants to go back to being 14.
Mm.
But the thing is that the warning signs are always abundant when you reflect back, and the thing is that you're close enough to your daughter that she can tell you, and so that there's a time in the day when you go into her room to say goodnight, or you're just hanging out in the same space, and you're quiet enough and peaceful enough that she feels like there's some bandwidth that you'd be interested in. And so not looking harassed, and so this means you have to look like you've got all the time in the world, Claire. Now, that's never the case, but it's they'll look and see, shall I tell Mum about this? And it's usually friendship angst is the big one in primary school. Hassles with boys and fitting in when in the teens and things like that. And so it means that you have to have one-on-one time with one child at one time so that they can bring you up to speed. And it's only when we're really rushing about too much, you look back and think, I've lost touch with her. And perhaps we just need a day trip away somewhere, the two of us, or an overnight trip. It's very good to just be one-to-one. So the family dynamics, leave your husband behind, or dad and daughter go away, just the two of them. And that way whatever's burning them up, they'll have a time to bring it up, because sometimes it's painful to tell you, or they're scared that you won't understand or you'll overreact.
Sometimes they're also so cautious. They really don't want to upset us. They've been so... Some children are just so careful about wanting to help keep that family equilibrium that they don't feel there's a space for them to be able to say that it's not okay with me at the moment.
Yes, that's right.
Viv from Carnegie has a question for you, Steve. She says, I wonder this too, what if you're a single mother who has no contact with a father or a grandfather?
Yes. Now, don't rush off and marry someone just because of male role models. It's not an urgent overnight thing. It's that in the course, she's growing up for 18, 20 years, that somewhere in there she meets men who treat her with respect. And so whether it's school teachers or activities or groups that you belong to, like an interest group or group of musicians, or the sort of circles where the men speak respectfully to her and treat her like she's intelligent and don't see her as some kind of sex object, basically. She needs to know men who are like that, and so that she gets a feeling in her bones like, I just talked to a grown man for 20 minutes about my opinions about politics or something, and he listened to me. That's the kind of figures that you want to somehow engineer into her life. And that's all it takes. That's not a big thing.
Steve Bittop, thank you for your work over the last few decades helping Australians learn how to parent our kids in a way that brings families together. Good for you.
Thanks very much, Claire. I can die an old happy man. Thank you.
There's some lovely text here for Steve Bittop. Steve's the author of 10 Things Girls Need Most. I'll read you out a couple. Here's, hi, Steve. It says, just a big thank you for the work you do. From parents of four girls under five, we have your books. They're our Bibles. Also, this comment from Sandra. We have three daughters, 11, 9, and 6. And you have a question, Sandra. You know what? I'm going to actually just say, Steve, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
I thought we'd lost you. Look, just this last question from Sandra. She says, we've got three daughters, 11, 9, and 6. I go away for 4 weeks at a time, several times a year. I get criticised for being away from them, but I find they are becoming closer to their father in this time. I found our eldest is also being very challenging with me when I come home. She's asking, is that a consequence of my going away or just the natural development? It's a big question.
It's really hard to know. It's great that they're getting close to their dad, but I think 4 weeks is a bit long, because there are things that only mums can really talk about, and that might intensify in the teen years, Sandra. And so if you could start to restructure that, in the years to come, it might just be a safeguard. I don't know how free you are to do that, but yes, a month is a long time for a 12 or a 13-year-old.
It's kind of hard job in some ways, your job, because you're standing there having to spell out the ideal for us and knowing full well that, you know, everyone's trying their best and so on. Do you ever get tired of that or criticised for that, for standing for an ideal?
Well, I think people make their own minds up, and when you're old, you sort of start to kick backsides a bit more, and people say, well, okay, Steve Bidoff has this thought. He's not ramming it down our throats. He's just out there saying this is what he thinks. I might take a piece of that. And I think what happens, really honestly, Claire, is people have misgivings in their own heart. And if what I say strikes a chord with that, it gives them the courage to make those changes. If it doesn't strike a chord, then throw it away. Just don't even listen. I'm perfectly comfortable with that.
Good on you, Steve Bidoff. Have a great day.
Thanks, Claire. Bye.
Bye now.